There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game. I'm Kevin Day, and over there in Sussex, proudly wearing his free Daily Star Dominic Cummings mask, is football finance expert at Liverpool University, Kieran Maguire. Good morning, Kieran. Are you going to keep the mask on for the whole thing?
I don't think so. I think you like to see the nuances of my face, and I might put you off otherwise.
Your face doesn't move. I'd give all the nuance in this podcast. I just think it'd be funny. Hats off to the Daily Star if we all had to wear Dominic Cummings masks. Now, if it turned out they were the best antidote to infection, that would be wonderful. 58 million Dominic Cummings travelling up and down the country. Now, we do have some big stories to get through, and we're a little bit late because you've been doing some highbrow legal stuff, haven't you?
I've been talking to the boys from Law in Sport, so I'm a guest on one of their panels, which for a ragged-ass kid from the Elephant and Castle is quite intimidating, but we'll have to see how that one goes.
Well, yeah, from what I can gather, your family knows quite a lot about the law, but not necessarily from their point of view. But now, first of all, the Women's Super League and Championship seasons have been scrapped. Was this a difficult decision for them to make financially? Obviously, we know there's nowhere near as much money washing around there, women's football as men's football.
I don't think they had much of an alternative. If you take a look at the WSL, nearly all the clubs there are losing between £500,000 to £1 million a year. The only way that matches could have taken place would have been is if the players were being tested. So clearly that would have increased the costs. So they've made the decision to abandon the top two leagues. However, they've not decided yet in terms of the Women's FA Cup. So that's currently reached the quarter-final stage. So we could have sort of one of these sort of mini one-week competitions taking place. But of course, it would mean that the players would have to have some form of training before that occurs. But there's the opportunity there to get decent TV audiences. You know, in a concentrated competition, my concern with women's football is that the senior clubs, you know, the men's clubs that effectively are subsidising the women's team, they're all looking at ways to cut back on costs. Women's football could potentially look vulnerable. They've not made a decision as to how to end the season. It's one of these really awkward positions that Manchester City are top, Chelsea are second, 1 point behind, but with the game in hand. Yeah, so under those circumstances, you can't make a right decision. But from financially, I think it's probably a sensible decision. My concern is the game, you know, it's making a lot of progress, and clearly this is going to be a setback.
For new listeners, we should clarify that they were losing between £500,000 and £1 million under normal circumstances, weren't they? That's not as a result of the current crisis, is it?
That's correct. I mean, you know, there is now professionalism in the game. It is an opportunity for women to have a career as players, which is great. You know, full-time careers. So that's really positive. But in terms of generating income, it was still struggling. In terms of match day income in particular, they were starting to get national sponsors. They were starting to get local sponsors as well. But the match day income has been a bit of a problem.
It's a real shame because, as you say, the national game, both here and in America especially, has been getting a much bigger profile. And domestically, it taken probably longer than they hoped to start to get some impetus. But that had begun, that process. People were starting to go to football fans. You know, Palace fans would become interested in the ladies' team, and they were a really good alternative if Palace were away or weren't playing. And it seems to me that this will be a setback for women's football in terms of it's going to be quite difficult to for fans of the men's game to get enough confidence to go back into crowds. Although, on the other hand, with the women's game having smaller crowds and being mainly at non-league grounds, it might be that there's more space there and people will be happier to go back to see women's football.
Yeah, and I think we've got to be led here by the health,
yeah, of course,
health directives and take it from there. Certainly, there were some, you know, significantly big crowds either taking place or were expected. I know one of the guys that works at Everton, and what they were saying is that because we've now got Everton and Liverpool, Manchester United and Manchester City, yep, you've got Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs and West Ham, some of those local rivalries were certainly sparking interest and generating additional walk-up fans in particular who would say, well, I'm a little bit reserved, or perhaps I wouldn't go to a game normally, but hey, you know, we're Liverpool, we're playing Everton today.
Yeah, sure.
I'm Liverpool. Let's go and give this a try. So, it is a step back, and it must be very frustrating for all of those people that have invested so much, yeah, of their time to date.
Now, Kieran, we know football fans, so we know that there will have been pessimistic Newcastle fans, anxiously worrying about the takeover and thinking, well, this is not going to happen. And I don't think even the most pessimistic Geordie would have expected piracy to be involved in the story, because it's hit a major snag, the takeover of Newcastle United, hasn't it? For a rather odd reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, this issue has been raised. The World Trade Organization, the WTO, has apparently, and this is a report in The Guardian, has apparently reached a conclusion that the pirate TV station, which is called Be Out Q, which is operating in the Middle East, is under the influence of Saudi Arabia. And clearly the Saudi Arabian PIF, the investment fund, is the senior partner in respect of the proposed takeover of Newcastle United.
So it's just to clarify, Kieran, so this is a TV company that are illegally showing Premier League matches in the Middle East, is that correct?
That's right. And, you know, from an outsider's perspective, it looks like it's an extension of the Cold War that's presently existing between Qatar, whose national broadcaster, Bein, has the rights for the Middle East, and Saudi Arabia. I mean, they were practically at war a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So this was a way of potentially fighting back, if these allegations are correct. What we're now looking at is, are there any genuine links between the people involved in the piracy and the people bidding for Newcastle United? Clearly, the bidders, PIF, say, well, it's nothing to do with us. Their lawyers will be going along that track. And the Premier League is having to make that final decision. There had been rumours before these revelations yesterday that a final decision would be made this week, and it looked as if the thumbs up had taken place. The two parties have exchanged contracts, the deposit has been paid for Newcastle. I don't think the Premier League is going to rush through a decision whilst these allegations are going to be made.
We know from experience, Kieran, that fit and proper person tests are very rarely that. There's so much money involved here. My instinct is that the Premier League are going to be very unwilling to nod this through on the basis of what they would probably see as a matter of borderline illegality a long, long way away, aren't they? I mean, and it's very common, apart from the fact that the pirate radio station called themselves Out against In, which was the real one. I think the Premier League, as we know, will find an excuse if they can to look the other way, won't they?
Well,
I mean, which they were perfectly willing to do with abuses of human rights in Saudi Arabia for a start.
Yeah, because, you know, rightly or wrongly, human rights have got nothing to do with the fit and proper person test.
Right.
That is very much a two-tier test, and we've had this discussion before.
Yeah.
Do you have a criminal record, and do you have unspent convictions, and do you have the resources to fund the club? Now, on both of those, it would appear that the owners are in you know, have satisfied those particular rules. The criminality issue is the one which is now being questioned, because if there are links between a pirate TV station and the owners, clearly then the Premier League itself, which has made representations to various people in the Middle East about this, say, yeah, we're not happy, it's damaging our relationship with our broadcasting partner, they will be concerned. But yeah, Britain does have strong links with Saudi Arabia. Clearly, you know, if you look at British aerospace, there's a lot of jobs involved. I suspect there could be geopolitical pressures coming in both directions.
Okay, now if you're in Newcastle and you need your eyes testing, it's just a few short miles drive across the border. If you want to go 30 miles to make sure your eyes are working, just head for Scotland. And in Scotland, we've got three stories, in their own way, very interesting big stories. And the first one, from up there, or over there, if you're not in England, Gordon Strachan, who's a former Scotland manager and big comedy fan, I have to say, he'll be missing the Edinburgh Festival. Now, Gordon said, too many of the country's senior clubs are not professional enough. This, now, what I find interesting about this is I know Gordon reasonably well, having worked with him. He's a very interesting chap. He's a very decent chap. He's got very passionate views about football. But also, he knows that if you raise your head above the parapet in Scotland, it will never be forgotten. And he's had an awful lot of flack for what he's saying. So basically, he said was, how can you have professional football when most of the clubs are not actually professional? Too many of the clubs are not bringing in enough attendances. Too many of them haven't got an academy. Scotland can't compete on the international stage while this is happening. Now, is there a particular catalyst for him saying this now, or is this something that's been festering in Scottish football for quite some time?
Well, Scottish football always appears to be having some form of civil war. And what we're seeing at present is, how is the future of Scottish football going to take place? How many teams are involved? So this is all linked to the issues to abandon the league. And is there going to be a replacement? Are we going to move to a 14-14-14 approach? Is it going to be 12-12-12-10? What about clubs in the Highland Leagues who have made progress and effectively won't be able to join the Scottish Third Division? So there's a lot of unhappy people in Scottish football at present. And I think one of his comments that, you know, don't just play at being a football club, be a football club, was one of the things which has provoked a reaction. From my observation, remember we had Neil Doncaster on the show, and he said of the 42 Scottish clubs, 14 are full-time professionals, the other 28 are part-time. Again, Gordon Strachan saying you're playing in front of 200 people, you've got players who are on £80 a week, and that club has the same vote as Rangers and Celtic. And I say, well, I can understand that, but you and I, democratically, have the same vote at an election as a person who's a billionaire. So, you know, what is the purpose of the SPFL? If it's supposed to be a democratic organisation, then whether you support Queen of the South or Celtic or Rangers or Dunfermline or whoever it's going to be, you know, it is very much sort of the one team, one vote approach being taken place. I think his comments, they seemed a little bit harsh because, as you know, I keep a spreadsheet and I monitor the profitability of every single club in both England and Scotland. And what we tend to see is that those clubs in the lower leagues in Scotland are actually quite good at breaking even, but you've got clubs in the top tier who are making significant losses. So in terms of being a professional organisation, surely one of your ambitions as a professional company, regardless of the nature of it, is that you should be trying to break even. So, you could say here is that some of the smaller clubs are actually operating in a more sustainable manner than their more senior cousins.
Yeah, is your case full of spreadsheets? Is it like the attaché case in Pulp Fiction? It's like when it opens up, there's a kind of golden glow.
I get a golden glow from it, certainly.
Well, of course, yeah. Do you know, just on democracy, before the last Palace home game before lockdown finished, I was talking to my mate's 12-year-old daughter in the pub. 12-year-old daughters are allowed in the pub under special circumstances. But I was talking to my mate's 12-year-old daughter, and we were talking about voting, and she came up with this brilliant idea, and she said that she couldn't wait to vote, but she said that she thought between the ages of 18 and 30, your vote should count twice, because you were going to live longer to see the impact of what was... And it kind of made a room full of middle-aged men feel rather, well, old. But also, I thought it was quite a good idea. Young people, their vote should count more. The thing that stuck out with me with Gordon's comment, which again is one that has been picked on, when he was quite scathing about the Premier League as well. And as you say, once you get beyond the top two and then maybe Aberdeen and a couple of other clubs, and he talked about the product, and he said if you think that watching two teams play long ball football on a plastic pitch in front of 1,000 people is good for the Scottish Premier League and for the wider view of football around the world, then you're wrong, essentially. Which, again, coming from him, it's a slightly reckless thing to say, because, like you said, the Scottish press are not... They're not gentle about these issues, are they?
No. I read The Scotsman this morning at about 6 o'clock to try to, when I was researching the story, and I think a lot of people in Scotland have, as they are inclined to do, sort of taken quite a severe response to this. And they're pointing out that Andrew Robertson, who's now at Liverpool, the Scotland captain. Mm. You know, where did he start off his career? He started off at Queen of the South, so. Is it still producing the lower league footballs? Is it still producing players? Yes, it is. Is it producing a high number of high quality players? No, it isn't. But then you could say the same of the National League here in England. So I think there are far broader issues in Scottish society in terms of education and health that have to be analysed before you can say that it's actually the clubs themselves which are the problem. I think they are a byproduct of their local environments.
Well, also, we've talked about this before on the pod, Kieran. It's people talk about the influx of overseas players in the 90s and 2000s affecting the England national team. I think the influx of European players into England affected Scotland more than it did England, because in the decades before that, every Premier League, every First Division club would have three or four Scottish players. Most of the Scottish players in the Scotland team would be based at England clubs, and that simply disappeared. If clubs could suddenly afford glamorous foreign players, they were going to look there abroad for cheaper players than they were to Scotland. So, again, it's interesting that Gordon said this now, because he's aware of that context as well. Like you say, this is much more than a Scottish football thing. This is a Scottish society thing, and Scotland within European and world society as well.
Very much so. And if you take a look at Scottish football, and I think we discussed this on an earlier pod when we were looking at the impact of the proposed new regulations for players coming from the EU, Scotland historically has been quite a popular destination if you are Scandinavian, if you're Central European, and so on.
And
what we might see as a result of these rule changes is that it will be far more difficult for those players to get a job in Scotland, which will increase opportunities for local players. Whether it will increase the quality of the football is open to question.
Now, Kieran, still in Scotland, you mentioned this club actually, Dunfermline Athletic. Every football fan listening to this will understand that there are clubs that we don't, I've just written a book about the fact you support one club. I know this is not directly aimed at you, Kieran, because I think we've worked out there's only three clubs you don't support. But we all have a soft spot for other clubs. And Dunfermline Athletic are one I've always liked for the very simple reason that when I was a kid, somebody bought me a football annual, and there was a picture of a Dunfermline player who was in so much agony after a tackle, he was biting through the shin pad of one of his teammates. And as a kid, I thought this was the most amazing photo. So I've always looked out for Dunfermline Athletic since. So I was slightly sad to hear this story, because they've announced this week they're not in a position to offer new contracts to any of the players that are about to be out of contract to buy any. I mean, 17. So they've got 17 players whose contracts are coming up for renewal. None of them will be renewed, which it means if Scottish football were to come back quicker than we thought, they'd be unable to fulfil fixtures at the moment, basically, because it'll leave them with 9 professionals, presumably, will it?
That's right. I mean, they'll be in a similar position to what we saw in respect of Bolton Wanderers at the start of start of this season. And if you recall, Bolton started off with 5-0 defeat, followed by 5-0 defeat, because they're putting out a bunch of kids because they couldn't employ professionals. So it is a genuine risk. And I mean, I like you, have got a soft spot for Dunfermline, mainly because I'm a huge fan of the Skids, who are the new wave game, so the new wave band. And I've been to see them many, many occasions, and they're from Dunfermline, and Richard Jobson was one of my heroes and still is.
Have you met him?
I've tweeted to him, and he responded, and that was it. It was almost as good as meeting you in terms of slip. Oh, have you?
Yeah, he's very handsome. He became a male model, didn't he? He's a very handsome man. Yeah. Married a friend of mine, and he's a friend of Nice chap.
Well, I went to...
Big accountancy fan.
Oh, I'm sure.
Big fan of accountants.
I know on the last tour, because we're all now of a certain age, that it was actually a speaking tour interspersed with songs.
There's nothing worse than seeing the UK subs advertised, not with original bassist. I like this. So I went to see Chaz and Dave, and there's a big sign saying, not the original Chaz, which is terrible. basically just went to see Dave.
So yeah, there is an issue, but you can understand it from the perspective of the club.
Yeah.
They don't know when their next pound's going to come through the turnstiles. And under those circumstances, to offer players contracts is putting the risk of the existence of the club very much at stake. So on that basis, what they've done is understandable. But what I did go onto the Dunfermline website this morning to do a bit of background to confirm the data in terms of the story. They are still hoping to continue. So you can now get a Dunfermline Athletic COVID-19 face mask, which is good news. They have released their new kits for next season, even though they might not be playing.
Yeah.
But most interesting of all, they've produced lockdown whiskey and it's sold out. So I think that shows the priorities of Scottish fans.
Of course it has. Yeah, you said that, not me. It's I have mixed feelings about this. The next story we're coming on to, I have even more mixed feelings about. But the thing it strikes me that Dunfermline have done the right thing in terms of securing their club's future. But it means you've got 17 more footballers that are looking for a job in a market that's already going to be full of players. I mean, there's going to be a lot of players whose contracts expire at clubs in the next week or two looking for, and there simply won't be enough clubs able to take them on. So, one feels for anybody who's lost, as we have in our house, work through this. But, you know, footballers work so hard all their lives to become footballers and then to be victims of these sort of circumstances. My heart does bleed a little. Now, this next story, I do generally have mixed feelings about this story, this Livingston story, because part of me thinks it's funny and part of me thinks it's tragic. Now, normally, as a comedian, the funny bit always overrides the tragic. I'll go for the laugh first and then apologise afterwards because I've upset somebody. But Livingston are in a similar situation to Dunfermline. They can't afford to renew every player's contract. Some players are having their contracts renewed. Some are being released. So what they've done, they've put a poll out on Twitter to see whether their fans want the goalkeeper to have his contract renewed. Now, because I leave the research to you, because I like to be surprised, brackets, a little bit lazy, I don't know whether this is one of those things where if, for example, 2 years ago Palace tweeted out, should we keep Julian Speroni, they did so confident in the knowledge that every Palace fan would go, hell yeah. So I don't know whether this guy is so popular that they know it's a kind of academic exercise or whether they're genuinely risking humiliating a young man by deciding whether or not to extend his contract by Twitter. And also, on a serious note, the legality of this is kind of interesting, isn't it? If he's got one of your silver-tongued lawyers who's going to be saying this is not entirely, you know, in terms of employment law, I'd with my HR hat on, I'd be very reluctant to terminate someone's contract on the basis of Twitter.
Yeah, I think there is more to this than meets the eye.
I gathered as much when I was being facetious about it. I did gather as much, Kieran, but you're the serious grown-up one.
I think that we're dealing with their goalkeeper, Gary Maley. I think this actually is linked to some of the recent votes which have taken place in terms of the future of Scottish football, which we've discussed. Ah, okay. And I get the feeling, because some Livingston fans have said, oh, it's a joke. Some say he was out of contract anyway, and things of this nature. So it looks as if it's linked to the nature of the votes which have been taking place and across a variety of issues. And Livingston's are saying, well, yeah, if we're deciding Scottish football, if we're deciding who gets promoted and relegated on a vote, let's just take it a stage further. And the Twitterati become the Coliseum in terms of the thumbs up or thumbs down. So I think it's a joke at our expense, because we don't understand the intricacies of Scottish football. You know, I think from his point of view, the vote was positive. From when I was last monitoring, I did vote myself to protect his job, because it's the right thing to do. And, you don't want to see anybody you lose their job, as we just said. So it's a complex one, but it does raise an interesting issue in that if football clubs are going to try to use crowdfunding or alternative means of generating income, is this one which they might consider? You pay a premium rate phone line, and you text in, and you give money to the clubs for protecting particular players' contracts and so on. So we're entering. We're operating in very strange times. I was looking at our Broth yesterday, which the Red Lichies, I think they're known as, and they look at absolutely fantastic ground. It's right on the banks of the North Sea, and they are doing buy a brick to save the club. Oh, okay. because so different clubs using different methods, and they are being as innovative as they can. Nobody who's a football fan wants any club to get out of a business, even if your biggest rivals. I think none of us are that mean spirited.
There's no doubt the Scottish clubs have better nicknames than we do. They're way ahead of us in terms of nicknames. The Blue Brazils is my favourite, Cowden Beef, which is one of the best nicknames in football. I'm glad you were able to put some context on that, Kieran, because my instinct was I found it slightly distasteful that a young man's future was potentially being decided by social media. But I'm glad you were able to explain the reasons why that was happening. Now, Man United, of course, are in the news because they're still sulking with you because of your VAT revelations. Yes, you may well pull that innocent face, young man. Now, they've waived outstanding loan fees for three of their players this week, which saves three clubs a combined £130,000. Is this a generous gesture on their part, or is it simply they don't want these loan players back on their wage bill?
My view on any club and any decision they make is that we will praise the good stuff and we will criticise the stuff which we're not so impressed by. So here, credit to Manchester United, they've got players on loan at Bolton, Burton, and Hearts, and effectively what you do is that a loan, we tend to think of historically, I always thought the loan was the player just went there.
Yeah, of course.
But what we are seeing more and more of, especially when the parent club is from the Premier League, is that they will say, well, hold on, we're actually going to charge you a rental fee for the season for the player. And that can be substantial. If you take a look at Philippe Coutinho at Bayern Munich last season, I think the loan fee was £9 million. So we're not talking small sums. What United have done, and I think they should be commended for this, is they said that we are aware of the financial challenges which are existing in the EFL and Scottish football. And therefore, we are simply going to say thanks, but no thanks. Yes, contractually, you due to pay us £130,000 for these three players, but as a goodwill gesture, we're going to decline it because we'd rather you survive. And hats off to them, and
good,
doffed, and so on.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Bayern Munich last night, but my word, they looked a good team. We wrote Have I Got News For You yesterday, obviously by Zoom, but the three of us made a corporate decision to start a bit earlier so we could finish early enough to break off and watch this Dortmund-Bayern. And what a good game it was. Now, I'm pleased to hear that that's a generous gesture from Man United, because this is definitely a generous gesture from one of their players. Marcus Rashford, this is brilliant, has been given an award for helping to raise £20 million for a charity called Fair Share, who have been providing nearly 3 million children with free meals during this crisis. Now, leaving aside those absolute pricks, who of course on social media have been saying, well, what was that, a week's wages, blah, blah, I wanted to mention this because he's just one of many footballers. And we talk about this a lot, and I think it's important to stress this. He's just one of many footballers who are doing, not just during this, but before that, who are doing decent things, helping local communities. And I'm pleased that this has been getting the publicity it deserves, particularly when right at the start of this crisis, Matt Hancock did the classic dropping the dead cat on the table and saying, what about footballers' salaries? Basically hinting that they should be paying for PPE. So this is just one example of many. I don't particularly want to discuss it. I just want people to know that Marcus Rashford has been an extraordinarily generous young man and has helped children to eat during this crisis.
That's right. And also, you know, Marcus has been very open in terms of his upbringing and the struggles that his mum had, and the sacrifices that are being made. And he knows what it's like, because, you know, he's seen people in his family go without in order to provide for him. He wants to put something back. He's certainly been the face of this campaign, and he's been able to use his status to get other people to join in as well. And so many footballers are doing so many things of this nature. You know, even footballers who historically people have had a huge dislike for. You know, Craig Bellamy's done amazing work in terms of assisting kids and things of this nature. Many footballers come from traditional working class backgrounds. They know what it's like to see their parents struggle to make ends meet. And I think that there is too much of a perception, just because you earn a large amount of money, that you have no social or moral compass. I've taught a few footballers, I've taught many ex-footballers, and I've got to say, universally, that has never been the case in my observation. I'm in awe of them, because they're footballers. They are sons and brothers and husbands and boyfriends and so on. And I think this is something which is so easy to forget, because sometimes some of them act a bit daft. But when I was in my 20s, I was a freaking idiot.
Even as you said that, I could hear 25,000 people listening to this podcast going, hello, Mr. Pot. Some acts a bit constantly. Not only do you act daft, but you tell us about it on Twitter. That's what I keep saying. Every at least once a day, Ali will say to me, why are you saying indoor voice? Because every time I see one of your tweets about past misdemeanors, I just go, indoor voice, Kieran, indoor voice. on a serious note, and congratulations to Marcus Rashford and to all those players that are doing good work. Stevenage chairman Phil Wallace says there is, and I quote, absolutely no integrity whatsoever in the EFL board's recommendation to finish the league this season, League Two especially, and as his club sit at the bottom of League Two, I suppose you would say he would say that, wouldn't you?
Well, I think his displeasure was that the clubs themselves voted to, or the League Two clubs took a vote to finish the season and to have no relegation. And it would now appear that the EFL board want to have no finish to the season, but to have relegation. That is where he's coming from. And I think the rationale of the EFL board is that if they set a precedent of having no relegation from League Two, that could be seized upon by the Premier League, who would say, well, we're going to take exactly the same approach and have no relegation. And therefore we might not have any promotion from the championship as well. So this is very much, right, I think, the EFL board trying to protect the opportunities for championship clubs to be promoted. And there's been all types. And I mean, there's a today we're recording this show today on the Wednesday. There's a meeting taking place of Premier League clubs today. We might have some white smoke. We might have some progress made in terms of what their plans are. But you know, everybody will be operating to a degree of self-interest,
yeah,
as we are seeing across all the leagues universally.
I suppose as well, whatever outcome. I mean, it does seem to me to be very unfair to not play football and relegate a team. But it does seem to me, whatever outcome, some teams will be harshly done by. But it's easier for me to say that because I support a club that's relatively comfortably mid-table and probably won't be getting relegated, whatever decision is made. If I was a Stevenage fan, I imagine my view would be less philosophical. But it does seem to me that there are going to be victims in this. And as we've said before, the important thing is that as long as the clubs still exist, what division they're playing in is maybe less important. And I'm fully aware that there will be people who support teams at the bottom of divisions or at the top of divisions who may not get promoted, who are angry with me, and I understand that. But it does seem to be that the important thing is keeping football going wherever you're actually playing the football.
Yeah, and the thing is with Stevenage is that they won't be in the Football League next season, yeah, if this goes through. So you can see it from their perspective. Yeah, Tranmere Rovers this morning have come out with a sort of statistically based approach to finishing the season in League One. Yeah, that will be debated amongst other things. You can understand if, for example, you're a Charlton fan. Charlton dropped into the bottom three of the Championship for the first time the weekend before we stopped playing football. And also, you and I both know we've watched football for, you know, best part of 100 years between us. And if there has never been a case where the bottom three teams or the bottom four teams after 37 games are the bottom four teams after 46 or 42 games or 38, whatever it's going to be. Because if that was the case, you might as well finish the season after 9 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody loses form, gains form, has a controversial decision, and that's part of the wonder of the game. So you can understand people feeling sore. You know, I've seen Darren McAntony, the Peterborough chairman. He and I had a chat, shall we say, on Twitter, in respect of, you know, he thought that League One could be finished for $250,000 per club, and I'm going, well, I've got a spreadsheet which suggests that might not be the case, so you know, he wants to finish because his side are in the potential place of a playoff. So there's nothing wrong with saying I'm operating in self-interest. It's when people deny it and start to go, this is for the integrity of the game. No, let's be grown-ups in terms of this discussion.
And talking of grown-ups, can you never mention again that we've probably watched football between us for 100 years? Let's draw a veil over, because it's... I had a momentary lapse into depression then, even while you were answering that question. I just thought, oh my God, he's all right. Also, I can think of at least two seasons. You're right to say that normally by, you know, March, the bottom three are not settled. I can think of at least two seasons when by December we were pretty much relegated. So it can happen, but you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, the games in hand thing muddies the waters, and like you say, it would be heartbreaking for Charlton. But there again, you could argue, you know, the clubs have been relegated after not being in the bottom three all season until the last game of the season. So, you know, unfortunately, there's no easy answer, which is why we keep doing this pod every week, which is great. Now, Arsene Wenger is... I don't think we've ever actually mentioned Arsene Wenger on this pod, which is a shame, because I'm a big admirer. He's now head of football development at FIFA. And he said... And I'm surprised this hasn't got more publicity. He said financial fair play needs to be reformed. So two questions, why and how?
Well, yeah, because historically, Arsene Wenger has been one of the biggest critics of clubs such as PSG and Manchester City. Yeah. I think he was one of the first people to coin this phrase, financial doping, and things of this nature. The reason why he's made his comments is that he's said that financial fair play preserves the rights of the historic big clubs and is effectively anti-competitive. It discourages people to come in terms of investment. And the one thing which I think we can universally say with regards to football at present, it has never needed financial support more than ever before. So if you've got an artificial barrier to a club progressing in terms of being able to achieve success, and that's what financial fair play does, because it, whilst it's not a de facto wage cap, it does act as a wage cap by limiting your overall spending, then you can see his point of view. I think he's made his comments in the light of the Newcastle takeover, because what the Newcastle owners presumably would like to do would be to have a blank check to be able to recruit players and a management team that will accelerate their position in the table so that they can be competing for Champions League places and the glamour and all of the things that come along with it. He did in 2017 sort of intimate something of a similar nature, but now he's come out. My view of financial fair play is that it reinforces the existing gaps between clubs, and whilst it doesn't make a Leicester City impossible, it makes it far less possible for that to happen again. Again, if you go back to when we were kids, or we were young, I can remember Derby County, Leeds United, Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, Everton, all winning the top division.
Yeah.
Well, that ain't going to happen again, is it? And that's partly due to the fact that the lack of democratisation of money distribution in football doesn't take place.
Yeah, well, even in the FA Cup, I think Wigan are the only team outside the top six to win the FA Cup in recent memory. And again, that was a competition that you would expect many clubs to be able to win. Has he sort of put any meat on the bones as to how he'd like to see it reformed, or is he just wants it reformed?
He's effectively said that investors should be able to invest.
Right.
Now, whether that means we have some form of escrow account that if you're going to spend money above X million, then you've got to put it into a central fund, which could then be distributed amongst smaller clubs. There are ways and means in which more than one club can benefit from investment by a high net worth individual or a sovereign wealth fund or things of this nature.
Yeah, okay. I'm just making a mental note to Google escrow, because that was a very good explanation, Kieran, but it went in a second. Last time I heard that used was in The Simpsons, I believe, who also used the word tontine, which is a financial word which I had to look up, which basically means last one standing gets the money. Anyway, now, our final question. I like our producer. I do generally like our producer. I like most producers. I just am quite surly about the need to actually be in work, to be perfectly honest. Most things would get made without them, is my view. This pod is an exception. Guy, it's his idea. He put us together. It's a great... But for the most part, when Guy sends me the questions, I go, yeah, good, that's an interesting question. This is the first time I've ever had to say to Guy, is this wise, asking this question? Because I knowing you as I do, basically... South Korea. We're going to South Korea. FC Seoul... football came back in the K-League behind closed doors, obviously. FC Seoul have been fined for filling some of the empty seats with inflatable sex dolls. And the inflatable sex doll industry being what it is, most of them were women, which of course led to a lot of jokes about inflatable toilets. There's been plenty of jokes about Kyle Walker wanting to sign for FC Seoul, etc. And plenty of jokes about shouting going down at inflatable fans. But... Is this the most unusual thing a club's ever been fined for? I know that pornography, I mean, is technically illegal in South Korea. It did look rather sinister. I saw the footage last week, and it did look odd. And quite clearly, the sex dolls also had adverts for a pornography company on them, which I think is one of the reasons the fine has been. But it's a strange story, I'm rambling because as far as I know, you've never taught in South Korea, but I suspect I might be about to hear that that's wrong.
I have never taught in South Korea, but as you know, I used to manage a sex shop. So I do have a vested interest in this. And I suspect.
Can you please, for the love of God, tell people why you were managing the sex shop?
I graduated from university and I was unemployed. And one of my mates was running it, and he said, "I'm going off for a couple of months, going off on holiday. Would you mind running it for me?" And I said, "Fine." So you could say I was the relief manager. Boom, boom. Thank you. But I wish I hadn't.
Do you know what? Because this got mentioned very early on in this pod, and I've been telling people, because that's one of the many things they want to know about the Blackpool nightclub, obviously. But I've been telling people, did he manage the sex shop? And I say, no, only because it was in administration and he was the accountant who had to administer it. And now it turns out that, no, you just willingly managed the sex shop for quite some... It wasn't in Brighton, was it?
Yeah, it was in Brighton. It was in Brighton. But the thing was, as you know, I like you, come from an Irish Catholic family. Mm. So I told my mum I was unemployed and I was going out looking for work. You can't go and tell your mum, who's of course never more than 2 feet away from a set of rosary beads, that you're running a house of ill repute. I did that, and it's an interesting industry, but not really linked to football finance, I guess. And I took a 50% pay cut to become a chartered accountant. So I was on £150 a week, and I dropped down to £75 a week to train to be a chartered accountant in 83.
That explains a lot about your personality. You willingly left the sex shop to become a chartered. There's all sorts of spreadsheet jokes that I'm not going to do, but I mean it is a funny story, but have they fined them because they were sex dolls or because of the advertising on them?
Well, it's actually a record fine for a South Korean club. So I think it's the magnitude of the fine which I think took. I think it's right. It's 100,000 won, I think it was the view was that we're supposed to have a family audience watching this, and clearly it's the equivalent of an Ofcom fine, because I got into trouble a few weeks ago. As you know, my bookshelf is over my right shoulder.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of Viz magazine, and I had the Fat Slags annual on view whilst I was talking to ITN, and they said it was inappropriate, which I think is unfair, because to me that is classic seaside English humour.
I think you need to add the other detail, which is that you also had your own book prominently displayed on the bookshelf as well. It wasn't just a fan tag. So I think that was part of the reason they gave you a mild slap on the wrist as well. We'll have to have a point. I've done things, but you know, you've been told off by Ofcom, Man United. I've been reported to various people. It's just, anyway, I'm glad that we managed to end up on a Korean inflatable sex doll football story, because it'd probably be the last time it happens. I noticed as well that Guy, the producer, has clearly got the hump with me for teasing him about the amount of things I have to say at the end, because basically he's just put goodbye at the bottom of it. So all the things I have to say about it being a Dapdick production and Lever, they've all gone. So thank you for listening to The Price of Football with me, Kevin Day, and animal Kieran Maguire. Now, next pod will be on Monday, and of course, the Monday is our questions. So if you have questions for us, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. We have a bit of breathing space these days, so feel free to ask elaborate questions if you want. We had some very complicated questions last week, but they led to really interesting answers and a good response. And feel free to ask questions that you think are simple, and don't be at all afraid to ask questions that you think are idiotic, because basically they won't be as idiotic as any of the questions I've asked Kieran, because if you don't know the answer, you don't know the answer, do you? So feel free to ask us whatever question you want. Perhaps best leave inflatable sex dolls for a little while, but you know, anything else. And some of the questions, if they're about Kieran, won't get read out. I think there will be disappointed people listening week in, week out, going, hang on a second, well, he still hasn't answered that question I asked about. What? Never mind. Kieran, I'll see you on... Sorry. I'm going to have to stop looking at you, Kieran, now. I'm sorry. That's how I'm getting embarrassed. I'll see you on Monday. And we'll see you all. Have a safe weekend, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye now.
The Price of Football.
Bye-bye now.
the price of football.